Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
Welcome to WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation.
And your hosts, Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Well, Lisa Wolf isn't here, but someone else is. His name is Wayne Messmer.
A hound is here instead of a wolf.
How are you, Wayne?
Oh, man. It is so good to be awake and alive and just checking out the scene overlooking Chicago.
What do you think of this studio? Is this beautiful or what?
It's great. Yeah. Got a little room for a lot of people.
There is. This big skyline studio here at WGN. My good friend Wayne Messmer is co-hosting tonight. Lisa is on vacation. And tonight, Wayne, we have five classic radio shows, all with a New Year's Eve theme.
I love it.
And I know you're familiar with these shows.
I love these guys. Yeah, Ozzy and Harriet, Adventures of the Same.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we'll have some Sherlock Holmes. How is it that Watson never figures anything out?
He's kind of a bumbling... he's a doctor, so he shouldn't have been a bumbling doctor, but you're right.
He's a dimwit.
He is kind of a dimwit.
They're going to the Scilly Isles.
They are going to the Scilly Isles.
Which is a nice, that is England's archipelago.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Now you know that.
And then what else do we have for tonight?
Ooh, we have Gildersleeve. This is a good one. This is Hal Perry.
Right,
too.
It is Harold Hal Perry. Perry, yep.
Yeah, the great Gildersleeve. Mm-hmm. And Our Miss Brooks, lovely Eve Arden.
Right.
And Robert Young, Father Knows Best. Right. Radio version. Way different.
We always remember, it was way different.
Yeah.
It was completely different. He was a little crabbier on this show, I think.
He was harsh,
He was kind of harsh with his family.
Father
on the
Kicks
radio.
Butt, I think is the name of the original, but then he just changed it.
And
he softened up a lot
he
in the
did.
TV.
He was the only one that made the transition to television, too. All the rest got the axe.
I love that.
So a lot of classic radio shows for you here, all the way till 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm very honored to have my pal Wayne Messmer as the co-host tonight. So you're going to have a lot of fun, too.
We have a lot to talk about.
Because I'm gonna tell a little secret about you. You had a classic radio show years ago on WXFM.
105.9.
All right, so that's how I got to be friends with Wayne, because he had this great radio show. It was on like 6 in the morning, right?
It was on 6 to 9 a.m., Monday through Friday.
Right. Now, the guy that was doing it, there was somebody else doing it. His name was, I think it was Jack Kripe.
You are correct, sir.
Jack Kripe.
Yeah.
And he was doing this classic radio show. Now, what years were you on the air, and what years was Jack Kripe on the air?
Jack would have been like 79.
Wow. I wasn't even born yet.
Come on.
There we go.
All right.
1963. So I was 15, 16.
Yeah, you're already a radio nerd.
Yeah, I was a radio, and now I'm an even bigger nerd.
Yeah.
But
the thing, you know, the only reason we talk so often on the phone is because we didn't have a caller ID. It's like this kid calls me all the time, but loves the, you know, I mean, just because I think you and I probably fell in love with classic radio the same way.
Right.
Because we missed it on...
Right, we were exposed to it.
Yeah, but then we saw the great stars, many of whom made the transition to TV, in a totally different light.
Yep.
You know, but then we wanted to see how they got their chops in radio.
Well, I want to ask you more about that in a bit, but we're going to play our game, Guess That Song, sponsored by Cat's Pride. And we're going to have two songs from 1975. So a caller's going to call in, going to win a Lou Malnati's pizza.
Come on.
Not bad. Call now.
Can you send it here?
Yeah. 312-981-7200. We'll take the fifth caller, 312-981-7200. The caller will guess, and Wayne Messmer will be your lifeline. Stick around.
Ooh.
Guess That Song.
That's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to guess that song. All right.
Do I get a Lou Malnati's if I guess it first?
Only Fred. What's up, Fred from Brookfield? How are you, sir?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. All right. So Wayne Messmer's your lifeline. Here's the first song from 1975.
Come on, Freddie.
All right, Fred, what do you think?
I don't have a clue.
Well, this is my era. This is disco era. So what do you think?
Does Saturday Night Fever do anything for
well,
you?
Well, Saturday
Friday?
Night Fever, yeah. That's a good hint.
Travolta.
Yeah. Help at all?
No, I'm afraid I'm of a different generation.
All right, well, let's... what do you think?
What if it were Danny Kaye singing? Would you... You'd know... Fred, you'd know Danny Kaye.
Yeah, he would definitely know right? Danny Kaye. Yeah. All right, oh, so what do you think?
There you go. I think he got it, just because he didn't know it, and I didn't like that song anyway.
Well, it's Bee Gees. Bee Gees, definitely.
Well, for sure.
You know the song? It's Jive Talking.
Jive Talking. Sing along, Fred.
All right, Fred, here's your second song.
I'm sorry.
No problem. It's all right. You're a winner no matter what. Here's the second song, 1975. What do you think? You know, Fred?
No. I don't know at all.
All right. What do you think?
Fred, if you were big in the martial arts, you remember that show, Kung Fu?
Yes, Kung
the TV
Fu.
Show?
Absolutely.
Remember, did you ever see that one?
Yeah.
No, I'm far removed from all that,
right.
I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. Well.
All right. So what do you think?
I think that Fred has been kind enough to be patient with our shenanigans so that he can hear some classic old-time radio.
All right, here's the song. It is Kung Fu Fighting. Those kids were fastest. All right, so Fred's a big winner. He is going to win a Lou Malnati's pizza. Thanks, Fred, for playing the game with us.
Thank you very much.
All right, buddy, way to go. All right, we're going to start things off now with the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. They were really kind of... well known for their television show, but as you know, Wayne, they had a long run on radio too. And in fact, they started as sort of the singing and band lead. The singer, she was the singer on the Red Skelton Show, and he was the band leader on Red Skelton Show. And then when Red went into the army, left a void. So they kind of took over.
I know Harriet Hilliard. She had and would have had a great career on her own, but the Ozzie Nelson Band Orchestra. That was great stuff.
She was a great singer.
He was the, in doing some research here, it was, he, with the contract he had with ABC Television.
Unbelievable. 10-year, no matter what, even if it didn't pan out, they had to pay him for 10 years.
Can you imagine that?
No, not in this day and age.
Corporate lawyer, wait a minute. You're telling me if we cancel the show, we still got to pay this guy? Well, that's what I'm telling you.
Would have been.
Are you nuts?
Are you crazy?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's listen to a New Year's show. It's from January 2nd, so a day after New Year's Day, 1949, sponsored by International Silver. I remember my grandmother had International Silver. Let's tune this in. The uninterrupted now, the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet.
Well, you didn't tell me. Did you make any New Year's resolutions?
Oh, sure.
What are they?
You're not supposed to tell, are you?
Oh, sure.
I know when I can tell. In fact, that's part of the resolution, to tell millions and millions more people that the solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling.
The solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling. From Hollywood, International Silver Company, creators of International Sterling, presents The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, starring America's favorite young couple, Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard. Since the dawn of recorded history, mankind has greeted the arrival of the new year with celebrations and rejoicing. 5,000 years ago, on New Year's Eve, a famous Egyptian said, "Dick." And so it goes. A new year is born, and the old year takes its place on the pages of history. And in everybody's mind is an acute awareness of the passage of time.
Did we get any 1949 calendars yet, Harriet?
Well, if you mean the ones in the garage, it's over there on the table.
Oh, yeah. Hey, look, they're using a different girl this year. She isn't wearing much for January, is she? Wonder how she keeps warm.
Well, the look you're giving her must help a little.
Hey, look here, take a look at February. See, things start to get interesting. She's taking off her gloves.
When you get to June, don't expect anything. I tore that one out. You want more coffee?
Yeah, thanks. You know, I have a feeling 1949 is going to be a very nice year.
Started off very well.
Yeah, I thought so. In fact, that was one of the best New Year's Eve parties I've ever been to.
It was a lot of fun. There's only one thing I didn't like about it. I don't like the idea of teaming the men against the women.
Oh, you mean in the word game?
Mm-hmm.
Well, naturally, you didn't like it because the wives lost.
Well, no, not that. I just don't think it's fair to make the wives compete against their husbands.
Oh, I understand how you feel. We really trounced you, didn't we?
Well, if you put it that way, maybe we just didn't try as hard as the men.
Oh, sure, that's the answer. You let us win. The wives were so much in love with their husbands that you let us win.
I didn't say that. I simply said that maybe we didn't try as hard as you men.
Oh, I don't think we tried especially hard. In fact, it seemed to me we won pretty easily. You tried hard, but we were a little smarter.
Now, I'm so glad to hear you say that, dear. Some of the girls thought we made it too obvious.
No, no. You fooled me completely.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Pop.
Hi.
Hello, boys. Boys, let me give you a word of fatherly advice. Never let yourselves get drawn into competition with girls.
Guy, Pop, you don't think we play with girls, do you?
Oh, no. What about the spelling match?
When was that?
Oh, he means at the school Christmas party. We stood the girls in a spelling match.
Oh, and naturally the girls didn't try very hard, so the boys won hands down.
Oh, no, they beat the pants off us.
Gee, I don't remember that part.
The girls actually won fair and square?
Yeah, they were just too much for us. We didn't stand a chance.
Oh, I'm surprised, David. That's no attitude to take. Let's examine just why the girls won. Is it because they're brighter than you? No. More alert? No. Have more knowledge? No.
Isn't that funny? I would have said yes to all those things.
Let's get to the real reason the girls won.
I know. Girls don't have as much to worry about as we do.
Well, not only that, maybe you were just being nice to the girls and tried to lose the spelling match.
We didn't have to try to lose. It was the easiest thing I've ever done.
I don't like girls anyway.
Ricky's a little sore on account of what happened at Susie Dunkel's party. The girls insisted on playing post office.
Fully.
Sounds like you boys had quite a party.
Julie Thornberry said she had a letter for Ricky. She sure canceled his stamp.
Yeah. Why does she want to kiss me? She's got a cat. Let her kiss that.
Come to think of it, the girls won all the prizes at that party, too.
Of all the dopey games, pin the tail on the donkey. Fooey.
No wonder you didn't like it. Next time, don't insist on being the donkey.
Well, don't worry about it, boys. As soon as the girls get a little older, they'll let you boys win all the prizes. See, that's a little trick that the women use to make the men think they're smarter. At least that's what your mother says.
Not much sense in being a boy these days, is there? Come on, Rick. Let's throw the ball around.
You know, it might be fun to have a spelling match at our next party.
Oh, sure. And I suppose the wives would just murder the poor husbands. I tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a word right now you can't spell. An easy one, too. Spell... A glockenspiel.
Glockenspiel? G-L-O-C-K-E-N-S-P-I-E-L. Was I wrong? Huh? Was I right? Well, all right, how do you spell glockenspiel?
Well, let's be fair, don't give me the same word.
Hi, Oz.
Oh, hello, Barney.
Care to join me in carrying out this barrel of ashes?
No, thanks. You sure keeping the basement cleaned up? The New Year's resolution?
In a way. Catherine made it for me.
Women are sure hard to understand.
Ah, It's impossible.
Harriet and I were talking about the New Year's Eve party, you know, over at the Randolphs.
Oh. Did you get a little lecture, too?
No, no. Harriet and I were just talking about the games we played.
I should think she'd want to keep that quiet. Women didn't win a darn thing. Pretty solid proof of male superiority, I'd say.
I know this is perfectly silly, Thorny, but has it ever occurred to you that women might lose to men on purpose?
You have a fever, Oz?
No, I'm serious. Women are pretty strange. They might just do a thing like that, you know, just to make the husbands feel superior. Sort of butter us up.
Well, that doesn't make sense, Oz. At least not right after Christmas.
Well, and how do you explain the fact that women are such good losers? They lose all the time and they still smile.
Oh, look, Oz, women lose, they smile. But they have their own little ways of getting even with us for beating them. They're clever, Oz, devilishly clever. I beat Catherine a little game of gin rummy the other night, and what did she do? Turned off my side of the electric blanket, and I nearly froze to death.
Maybe you're right. I wonder if that was just Harriet's way of getting even with me, you know, trying to make me think the girl's lost on purpose.
Well, there's no doubt about it, Oz. And the dangerous part of it is that it's little things like that that cause a man to lose control of the reins in his own home.
Oh, Thorny, I don't think it's that important.
Okay, Oz. But if I were you, I'd get the upper hand again before it's too late. The husband has got to keep control of the household. Why don't you go in there and involve Harriet in some sort of competition and beat her fair and square?
Hey, maybe you're right. Certainly can't do any harm. No, I'll just challenge her to some sort of a contest and beat her.
Right.
Now, what's something I'm sure to win at?
Yeah. How about growing a mustache faster than she can?
Tony, it's got to be something she has a chance at. See, I know checkers. It's a good game, and I don't think she's ever played it. By golly, Thorny, I'll prove to her I'm a better man than she is. Harriet?
Yes, dear?
How about a little game of checkers?
Oh, I have to do the dishes, dear.
Oh, come on. Just one game of checkers.
All right, we'll play kitchen checkers. You take the dirty saucers, and I'll take the dirty cup, and we'll move them around the dishpan.
I don't understand, Harriet. I happen to feel like a little competition. I'll bet I can toss a penny closer to the edge of the linoleum than you can.
I don't want to play games, dear.
You mean you don't want to be beaten? You must have seen my high school yearbook. Probably read how good I was at pitching pennies.
Dear, why don't you have a cookie? That'll keep you quiet.
Oh, boy, chocolate. Why don't you have one, too?
They do look good.
I could eat a dozen of them.
So could I.
I'll bet I can eat more cookies than you can.
I'll bet you can, too. Are you trying to draw me into some sort of competition?
Not necessarily. How about some ping pong?
No, thanks, dear.
I'll give you an advantage. I'll play left-handed.
No, thanks.
I'll play blindfolded.
No, thanks.
Without a paddle.
No.
Doubled up with my head between my legs. I'll be the ball.
No, dear.
Well, I don't blame you. It is sort of useless for a woman to compete with a man.
Yes, it is, dear.
You mean you don't disagree with that statement I just made?
No, I think you're right.
Well, let's shake hands. That's it. Now put your foot against my foot, like this. Now, this is what's known as Indian hand wrestle.
You want another pillow under your head?
No, thanks.
You want to sit over here in your easy chair?
No, thank you, dear. I'm very comfortable lying here on the couch.
You aren't angry with me, are you?
Why should I be? You didn't throw me. I slipped.
I'm sorry. That soap just squished out of my hand when you grabbed me. Hope you didn't loosen a vertebrae.
I landed right on the base of my spine. The lower part. It could have pushed my spinal column right straight up. I'd have one horn on my head.
Would you like me to fill up your hot water bottle again?
No, thanks. I haven't finished drinking this yet. What are you knitting?
A pair of socks.
Is it difficult to knit a pair of socks?
Not once you've learned. You aren't thinking of taking it up, are you?
Just making conversation. Just for the fun of it, show me how you do it. Just give me an idea.
Well, roughly it's like this. You take one needle and loop the yarn over like this. Then you slide it off. That's knit. And then you reverse the process like this. And then slide these loops off. That's purl.
Hand it to me. I'll show you how fast I pick up stuff.
Oh, careful.
Just loop it over like this. And you slide these off. Where did everything go?
Yeah, that was fast, dear. It took me an hour to do what you undoed in 2 seconds.
What did I do?
You unraveled it.
Certainly is delicate. How does it stay together in a sweater? You know, I never realized what nerve it takes for a woman to wear a sweater. How long did it take me to knit a pair of socks?
Too long. Give the needles back there.
Oh, sure. I couldn't possibly knit a pair of socks as fast as you could.
Well, of course you couldn't.
I was hoping you'd say that.
What do you mean?
I think we've got ourselves a little contest.
Oh, Ozzy, you couldn't.
Shall we begin? Just get me some needles. All I want you to do is show me how it's done. And I may as well warn you, be prepared for a fight. When I was at Boy Scout camp, I learned to make a straw hat in 1 hour.
But, Ozzy, that isn't like making a sock.
It looked like one.
Well, I'll show you how, dear, but let's not make it a contest.
I'm afraid I might finish my sock sooner than you'll finish yours.
No, I'm afraid you might knit yourself into a bag and suffocate.
What irony. Beating Harriet at her own game. This will prove, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that men are superior to women.
See that man, the one so seriously engrossed in the work before him? That's Ozzie Nelson, one-time holder of the title, Man. Do you know what's running through his mind? He's wondering which is the superior towel in the bathroom, his or hers. At present, he's engaged in a bitter struggle, the struggle of a man determined to maintain his dignity and to preserve his rightful place as head of the household. Note the square jaw, the steely blue eyes, the look of determination, the look of a man ready to fight. A fair fight, yes, but a tough one.
Knit one, purl one. Knit one, purl one. Knit one, purl... Come on in, Barney.
Knit I just one. Came over... Well, Mother McCree.
I'm knitting.
Oh. Are you expecting a cuddly little visitor?
No, I wasn't, but as long as you're here, sit down.
I know it's January, but if you want some strawberries, I'll go get them for you.
Don't make fun of me, Barney. You suggested I get into a contest with Harriet, and this is it. A sock knitting contest. Push the book over closer, will you, Thorny?
Oh, knitting instructions. Item one, knit. Item two, purl. What are you doing, Oz? Item one or item two?
Item three, untangling the mess. Let's see. Move hands together, keeping needles and fingers in motion. That's it. Knit one, purl one. Knit one, purl one. Needles working harmoniously, action of the fingers nicely synchronized. Knit one, purl one. Knit one, purl one. How do you like that, Thorny?
Oh, that's very good, Oz. Now let's see you try it with the yarn.
See, that's the trouble. It works perfectly till I try it with the yarn.
Yeah. Well, try it again. Maybe I can find out what's wrong.
Well, just follow me along in the book there. Now I grasp the yarn with my left hand. I slip the needle through the loop. Now with the right hand, I pull the yarn over the left and slip the needle through. Now I cross the yarn over the right hand and slip the needle through.
Now what?
Now if you'll untie my hands, I'll continue. It happens every time.
Hey, let me see what it says here.
It says, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, I think I see what I'm doing wrong. Through... Over, slide. Under, through,
slide. Say, I've got it. Knit one, purl one.
That's the old fight. Knit one, purl one. Knit one, purl one.
It's just sort of a knack.
Knit one, purl one. Knit one, purl one. Oz, I knew you could do it. Atta girl, Oz, old boy.
Look at me, Jordan.
Come on, Oz, keep going. Knit one.
Knit one.
Purl one.
Purl one.
Knit one. Purl one.
Knit one. Purl one. Knit. Item three again. It's no use, Thorny. Just look at this.
Oh, don't give up now, Oz. You were doing great.
Well, I'll give it one more try. Through here. Loop over the yarn. Slide the needle down. Under here. Over there. Easy does it. Knit one, purl one. Knit one, purl one.
Yeah!
Knit one, purl one.
Oh, you're a devil with those needles.
Purl. So you're sitting on my ball of yarn.
Oh, sorry, I wondered what that was moving around.
Knit one, purl one.
Knit one, purl one.
Knit one, purl one.
That's it. Good boy.
Knit one, purl one.
Keep it up, Oz.
Knit one, purl one.
I have to go.
See you later.
Do not give up.
I won't purl one.
Not Oz.
Goodbye. Thorny, knit one, purl. Knit two, purl two.
Hi, Pop.
Knit... Oh, hi, fellas. I didn't hear you come in.
What are you doing, knit... Pop?
Now, that's a silly question. See these needles flying? What does it look like I'm doing?
Bleeding to death.
Hand me one of those Band-Aids. I happen to be knitting a pair of socks.
What part of the sock is that you're working on?
Gee, it isn't the toe, and it doesn't look like the heel.
Well, it started out to be the heel, but it was a little too small, so I decided to make it the toe, but it was a little too big, so it's going to be the coin pocket.
The coin pocket? I never heard of socks with coin pockets.
Well, I think these will have them. Anyway, neatness doesn't count in the contest.
What contest, Pop?
Oh, it's just a little contest your mother and I are having to see who can knit a pair of socks faster.
See, David? Pop's just like me.
What do you mean, Ricky?
Oh, he's been challenging all the girls to games ever since they beat us in the spelling match.
Oh?
He even challenged Mary Benson to Indian hand wrestling.
Oh, really? What happened?
I slipped.
I bet Mom will be awful embarrassed if you beat her, huh, Pop?
Oh, I don't think so, David.
You think she'll cry?
Don't be silly. Your mother doesn't cry.
Oh, yes, she does, Pop. She cries sometimes, but she never lets you see her.
Is that because she loves you so much, Pop?
Well, I suppose so.
I don't think she'll cry this time. She'll feel awful bad, but she's brave, boy. I wish I was as brave as Mom.
Ricky was even crying in the movies the other day.
Oh, yeah, wise guy.
Now, look, boys, you don't understand this. You see, I'm not trying to make your mother cry. This is just a little friend... Oh, darn these needles. Hand me another one of those Band-Aids, will you? Two of them. I think it went clear through.
Where are you going?
Downstairs.
Did you hear a burglar?
If I had, I wouldn't be going downstairs. I'll tell you a little secret. I've been thinking things over, and I'm going down to do a little work on your mother's knitting. See, I want to make sure she wins. After all, I don't want to make her cry.
You're going to knit on her sock to help her?
Well, yes. Something wrong?
No, I guess not. You sure do get yourself in some tough spots, don't you, Pop?
That's the third time you've yawned this morning, dear. Didn't you sleep well last night?
Not too well. I dreamt I was knitting. I'm awful tired of knitting, Harriet. I'm willing to admit defeat.
Oh, no, dear. The way you catch on to things, I'll bet you're way ahead of me.
No, not a chance. In fact, I'll bet if we take a look at what you've knitted so far and what I've knitted so far, we'll find you're way, way ahead.
Okay, let's take a look. Let's see, where did I leave my knitting when I went to bed last night?
Right there on the windowsill. I wonder where I left mine.
In the piano bench.
Oh, yeah, that's right. See, here we are. See, take a look at mine. It's all done.
Well, it's wonderful, dear. And look at mine. It's only half... all done.
Well, I knew. That is, I thought you,
this
I mean...
This is very strange. My sock looks terrible. I don't knit like this.
Well, I don't think it looks so bad.
Looks like a wool funnel.
What do you expect? I couldn't turn on any lights. I had to knit in the kitchen with the refrigerator door open.
What are you trying to say?
Well, I just came downstairs for a little bite to eat, and I happened to have my knitting needles with me, and... what about my sock? It looks pretty darn good.
Good. It looks excellent.
You didn't by any chance come down last night for a little snack, did you?
No, I didn't, dear. I came down to finish your socks.
But why did you want to finish my socks?
Because I wanted you to win. Why did you finish my sock?
Because I wanted you to win. Isn't this silly? Oh,
darling, what a beautiful thought. You wanted me to win.
No, I'm just a softie, I guess. But don't give me credit. It was really the boys. They sort of shamed me into it. In fact, they even suggested that if I won, you might start... What's the matter?
Well, it was so thoughtful of you, dear. I'm sorry. I think I'm going to cry.
No.
Mom, what's the matter?
Nothing, boys.
How come you're crying?
Oh, I see. You won after all, huh, Pop?
No, I didn't. I mean, your mother's laughing. She's crying because she's happy. Boys, no, boys.
Ozzie and Harriet will be back in just a moment. You know, I think Ozzie should have stuck to the strictly masculine pursuits and let Harriet handle the feminine. There's no doubt about it. Things work out better that way.
Well, maybe, Mr. Smith. But what would you say if I told you that my husband was the one who chose the silver for our home? It was international sterling silver, too. In what I think is the most beautiful sterling pattern of all. Prelude.
Well, I'd say that your husband is a man who has a fine appreciation for beautiful things. There's no lovelier solid silver in the world than that created by International Sterling, you know. Every piece is artist-designed, as carefully finished as a rare jewel. And that Prelude pattern certainly is one of International's loveliest designs.
Not too plain, not too fancy. It's just right for that delicate flower ornament. And we were pretty happy about the price of Prelude, too, Mr. Smith. Imagine buying anything these days that hasn't gone sky high.
International Sterling is a wonderful value, all right. Its prices haven't gone up in 4 years.
Why, we figured we saved about $20 by getting 8-piece settings in International Sterling's Prelude pattern rather than some other sterling. Honestly, I think every woman ought to take a look at International Sterling patterns right away.
Ah, words of wisdom from one who knows. See your International Sterling dealer tomorrow, folks. See the solid silver with beauty that lives forever. Famous International Sterling.
I think it was a wonderful idea for us to call the contest off, don't you?
Oh, sure. By calling it off, it makes it a draw.
That's right. And definitely proves once and for all that men are superior to women.
Now, just a minute. You didn't win.
Oh, yes, I did. For 13 years, I've been trying to get you to knit me a pair of wool socks. And now, by tricking you into this contest, I'm finally going to get a pair.
Oh, dear, I didn't tell you, did I?
Tell me what?
I promised this pair of socks to Thorny.
You mean after I slaved over that pair of socks and worked my poor fingers to the bone, he gets them?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, when he came over yesterday morning, he said he wished he could think of some way to get them knitted faster.
So that's why he gave me all that encouragement. Where are my knitting needles?
What are you going to do, dear?
You see this ugly, contorted mass of sock I've knitted?
Oh, I don't know, dear. It might fit somebody.
Oh, yes. It'll fit anybody who happens to wear a size 23 shoe and has a quarter-inch ankle. I'm going to knit a mate, and I'll give them to Thorny. He'll wear them. They'll cut off his blood supply at the ankles. His feet will be like icebergs. His wife will divorce him. He'll be a ruined man. What revenge? Knit one, pearl one. Knit one.
Tune in again next week to another adventure of Ozzie and Harriet, starring Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard.
And remember, the solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling.
Yes, Harriet, the solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling.
Appearing in support of Ozzie and Harriet were John Brown, Tommy Bernard, and Henry Blair. Original music was composed and conducted by Billy May. This program originates in the Hollywood studios of the National Broadcasting Company and is also broadcast over the Trans-Canada Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is Vern Smith speaking.
This is NBC.
Excuse me. This is Buddy Sisko, Horace Heights' present champion, hoping you'll hear me putting up the fight of my life the next half hour over NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That guy sounded like Henry Aldrich, didn't he?
It sounded like him. It also sounded like that the chimes were off.
It sounded like the chimes.
Yeah.
They sounded like they were warbly. Maybe they did it underwater that time.
Because you learn in music theory, bum, bum, bum. Okay, what is that? Bum, 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 you know? But they went bum, bum, bum.
Maybe it was a new guy hitting the...
I think it was. He didn't have the mallet technique down.
He didn't. Ozzie and Harriet, January 2nd, 1949, New Year's program. John Brown in that cast. Do you remember John Brown? He was Thorny on this show, but he also played... he was Gillis on the Life of Riley radio
show. Life of Riley with William Bendix.
And he was also Digby O'Dell, the friendly undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
We have...
Ed O'Reilly, you're looking good.
Very natural.
Oh, very natural, yeah. I've got to be shoveling off.
Wayne Messmer is my co-host tonight till 3 o'clock in the morning. We're going to talk with Wayne a little more, but... first, we got to pay some bills. My co-host tonight, Wayne Messmer.
Hello.
Yes, indeed. He is my co-host all the way to 3 o'clock in the morning. And we got to know each other because of classic radio. And I thought, wow, Lisa's out of town. I saw Wayne at Dave Plyer's party. And I said, Wayne, please do me a favor.
Yeah, it really took an arm twist. I said, come on, of course, it'll be fun.
Close the show with me.
Yeah. We do have a history.
And we do.
I have a surprise for you.
Ooh.
Which, will be great when we hold it up to the camera here in the
room. We'll have to. But we only have a minute, so let's save it till the next hour. But, yeah, I can't wait. Wayne's been telling me he has a surprise for me.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne used to do a show, WXFM, and he played classic radio, and I used to just bug him and bug him. I was 17, 18 years old.
A whippersnapper.
I was a whippersnapper. And I learned a lot about classic radio thanks to Wayne, and he loves this stuff. He told me, and this is true, he told me he listens to classic radio shows pretty much every day.
Every day, no question. At least 2 hours.
Loves classic radio. What an honor to have you on the air with me, my friend.
This is fun. I love listening to the shows. I love getting back to the time when these actually played, what was going on?
I know. Yeah. We are also very honored to have Ashley Byhan as our producer tonight, the best in the biz. Hi, Ashley.
Hello.
How's it going there, kiddo?
It's going well, and I'm excited to be with you guys.
She's an amazing, amazing producer. I'm very lucky. And we have Sherlock Holmes coming up, so stick around. Me and Wayne Messer will be here till 3 o'clock. That must be Memorex, because it can't be live, because she's in Florida.
Well,
that's,
you know,
Lisa there.
That was me. I'm a ventriloquist. Although the thought of a ventriloquist on a radio still does puzzle me, Mr. Bergen.
Yes, it is. When he tried to pitch that idea to NBC at the time, what do you think they were just looking at him when the blank space and there was like the little chirp, 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 chirp.
Yeah,
chirp,
yeah, chirp. He's got to be right? cuckoo until, you know,
Mortimer Snurr.
And his music,
and you know what? It was one of the most, might have been the most popular show in the late 1930s. The Edgar Bergen Charlie McCarthy Show.
I love Charlie. I have a Charlie McCarthy doll.
Do you?
Yeah.
How about the Museum of Broadcast Communication? They have the actual Mortimer Snurd, Effie Clinker, and Charlie McCarthy dolls over there.
My wife is going to donate something there.
Mm.
She has, and it's a paper, like construction paper, pretty large, like about 4 feet by 3 feet, and it's mechanical by pulling a string. And it was done by P.J. Hoff, the weatherman at Channel 2 with Fahey Flynn.
Fahey Flynn.
And it was off of his set, and he signed it to her.
Oh, very cool. Museum Broadcast Communications, good old Dave Plyer. He's turning that place into an amazing destination. You have to go to the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Are they open right now?
They are.
Right now?
No, they're not open right now because it's 10 after 11.
Oh, okay.
But I believe... But you can go over to the museum. Actually, they're actually remodeling it right now, so I think it's closed right now.
Oh, all right.
All right, so in this hour, Wayne Messmer, my co-host, we have Sherlock Holmes, New Year's Eve off the Scilly Isle with John Stanley and Alfred Shirley. They took over for Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. So that's coming up in this hour. A little later, it's Gildersleeve, then Our Miss Brooks, and Father Knows Best. We'll be here till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Gildy.
Great show. Oh. Hal Perry. I know. Pete Gildersleeve.
Hey, I know what P stands for.
Well, I do too, but I want to hear if you know, because there's two answers.
Well, there's a source to where my
answer
emanates.
Okay.
It would emanate from, very specifically, episode 258 of October 22nd of 1940.
And he actually says Philharmonic on it?
Philharmonic.
Oh, my gosh. And other times when they interviewed Hal Perry, said it stood for P, for Perry. So I think Philharmonic's a lot better.
Way better.
All right, we're going to play Guess That Song, sponsored by Cats Pride, 1975. Let's go with caller number 3. You're going to win a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers. Call now, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
Guess That Song.
Wayne Messmer is your lifeline. Hello, Grace from Dalton. How are you?
I'm doing well. And I don't know if you remember me, but we used to listen to WXFM when you were on. You know,
about that.
Yeah.
that was in the early 1980s through the 80s.
Wow.
I spent eight years there. But we did 3 years of just what was known as the WXFM 106, old-time radio show.
So, Grace, were you listening to Wayne when he was playing the classic radio shows back then?
Yes, I was.
Wow.
Every morning.
Isn't that great? Me too. We were both listening to Wayne together. And so now he's your lifeline. You ready?
Okay.
All right, 1975, hit it.
A long distance, directory assistance, Eddie Pope 212. Say, hey, AMR, this is Mr. Rhythm.
All right, that's all you get. So what do you think, Grace?
Oh,
what is that song? That's a good one. That's a good song.
Do you run or do you walk?
Wait,
is this a bad clue?
It might be a bad clue. I don't know.
All right, disregard that.
All right, so when you were listening to Wayne, did you call him on the phone at all?
Yeah, he sent me a couple shadow tapes.
Shadow. Wow, generous of you, Wayne.
I'm that kind of guy.
All right, so.
What's your guess, Grace?
What do you think this song is, Grace? Any idea? You're a winner anyway, so if you don't know, it's okay.
No, I don't know.
Wayne, do you know it?
It's a Bing Crosby White Christmas.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's play it. It's actually Sugarloaf. Don't call us. We'll call you.
At least the cat was cold, he said. Don't call us, child. We'll call you. I said you got my
You know, this song actually features an imitation of Wolfman Jack in it for a very short period of time. Great song. Wow. Don't call us. We'll call you. It's all about, actually, Sugarloaf's difficulties breaking into the music industry.
I'm going to barge in here.
Okay, you barge right in.
This is incompetent, irrelevant, and immaterial, Perry Mason would say. Grace, had you ever hear of Sugarloaf?
No.
Amen. What's the next song?
I think the here's the next song.
I'm too old for Philadelphia Freedom.
Oh, she's got it.
Elton John.
You know it. Elton John, Philadelphia Freedom. Let's play a little bit more of it. Yes, indeed. Elton John Band. This hit number 4 on the U.S. charts, and a big hit for Elton John.
Written for a women's sporting team.
That's right. Billie Jean King was a good friend of Elton John, and she was on a team called Philadelphia Freedom.
There you have it.
Yeah. Wow. All right, Grace, you're a big winner. You're going to win a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Great job. And thanks for listening to Wayne and me tonight.
It's great.
Let's talk every 40 years. Let's have a chat.
Take care.
All right,
way to go, Grace. Great job. All right, so Grace is a big winner. And
Huge winner.
Our listeners are going to be big winners because we're going to tune into Sherlock Holmes in just a moment. But you said you had a surprise for me. Can we talk about it?
I do before we head off to the Silly Isles.
The Silly Isles.
Yes, I have a presentation that I'm going to make.
Mm-hmm.
From May, June, WXFM 106 Old Time Radio Program Guide and Cassette Catalog.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
That's me reaching my shoulder.
Hey, that's not bad.
That's not bad.
That's pretty darn good.
That was a good one.
Drawing this. Yeah, I drew the cover of, look at this, original cover art. Carl Amari Jr., who is that guy?
I don't know.
He was a pest. Hal Perry, Lou Costello, Cecil B. DeMille, Charlie McCarthy, Jimmy Durante, Fred Allen, Superman in the Shadow. Okay, so what we'll have to do, maybe we can we post this? Yeah, we'll post this. Wow, not bad.
And I said that was good, therefore the September-October issue.
Oh, boy.
He came back with a Jim and Marion Jordan.
You know, I did this with pen and ink. I must have done this in art school. I was really trying to be an art. This is 1981, my senior year of high school. Look at these. Hey, pretty. I have another career if anything falls through here.
Well, you might as well make it 3.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at this guy, Fred Allen.
Fred Allen.
Not the handsomest lad to ever appear.
No, not
in public. But,
no.
He seemed to not mind it.
Wow, you hung on to these.
I have those in mint condition. And
look
on the back side, I have just the black and white copies.
Wow, we'll have to post these. You got to see some of my early artwork, folks.
I think I did put something on Facebook. And I was kind of hoping that you didn't see it.
I did not, because I don't look at Facebook. But
that's probably limiting the chances of you seeing it.
Lisa would come back right there and say, well, Carl can't read, so that's why, you know.
Well.
All right, well, Sherlock Holmes time. You ready for a trip to the Silly Isles? It's a disaster over there.
I know. And who are they kidding? They named the boat? The Gigantic?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, and happening in 1912, Gigantic Titanic.
That one didn't float so well once it hit that.
Okay, where's the cymbal crash when you do that?
Hang on a second. There you go.
Oh, now
buddy.
It's just pathetic when you get it that late.
So this is a December 28th, 1947 broadcast. It's a New Year's Eve show.
This is a. Sponsored by the clothier that you
Clipper.
Use, isn't it?
Yeah, Clipper Craft.
Don't you dress by Clipper Craft clothes?
I always wear my Clipper Craft clothes, I do say. Well, maybe I will be Watson because he was bumbling. You can be Holmes.
I'll be neither.
You'd be Nigel or neither?
No, I'll be neither.
All right, here is The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
New York, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast, present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes is portrayed by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley, and the dramatizations are by Edith Meiser. Well, here we are once again on the threshold of Dr. Watson's study. We find Mr. Holmes' genial biographer strutting up and down in front of his fireplace. Evening, Doctor. You look fit. The Christmas festivities don't seem to have got you down.
I am fit, Mr. Harris, very fit. Better than that, I'm rather well fitted. Well, great Scott, man, where are your eyes?
Why, Dr. Watson, don't tell me Santa Claus brought you a Clippercraft suit.
Well, why not? Just because I'm a wee bit venerable doesn't mean I'm antique. I still enjoy making a good impression, don't you know?
Well, in that suit, it'll be the girls that go... when you walk down the street, Doctor. Seriously now, Doctor, suppose you tell us what tonight's story is to be about.
Well, tonight I thought I'd relate how Holmes and I spent New Year's Eve off the Scilly Isles.
The Scilly Isles? That sounds appropriate, Doctor.
The name of these particular islands is spelled S-C-I-L-L-Y. They are located roughly 100 miles southwest of Land's End, Mr. Harris.
Oh, what in the world were you doing there on New Year's Eve?
Trying to prevent a great maritime catastrophe. You remember what happened to the Titanic? You know what happened to the Lusitania? Well, the lives of those on the ocean liner Gigantic were in even greater danger when Holmes and I went over the side on New Year's Eve in the year 1912. Oh, but good heavens. There I go getting ahead of myself again. Suppose I fix us a Tom and Jerry while you tell our listeners how to start the year right in a Clippercraft clothes.
Fair enough, Dr. Watson. Millions of men, like you, will start the new year in a smart new Clippercraft suit and overcoat. Yes, today more men than ever before wear Clippercraft clothes, for we've sold more Clippercraft clothes than ever before in our entire history. There's a reason, of course. The wise old American public, with its eye for value, has pronounced Clippercraft the most remarkable clothing buys they've ever seen. The reason for these amazing values is the sensational Clippercraft plan. Concentrating the buying power of 924 of the nation's leading stores from coast to coast, it accounts for tremendous savings in manufacturing and distribution costs. That's why truly fine Clippercraft suits are only $40 and $45, why Clippercraft top coats and overcoats are only $40, and sport jackets only $26.50. Clippercraft values are downright amazing. Compare them with clothes selling for many dollars more. And now, Dr. Watson, to return to the New Year's Eve you and Sherlock Holmes celebrated on the good ship Gigantic.
Yes. Here's your Tom and Jerry, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Doctor.
Be careful, don't burn yourself. Yes, it was probably the most hectic New Year's Eve I've ever experienced. Nothing is as terrifying to a seafaring man as the thought of fire aboard ship. The panic, the isolation. Oh, but that's neither here nor there. Yes, let me see. It was the last day of the year, 1912. Its inception was sufficiently placid, I must say. A light snow was falling as Holmes and I seated ourselves on either side of a well-filled breakfast table. The flames of our sea-coal fire reflected themselves cheerfully in the generous coffee pot. The whole house was filled with the pleasant aroma of the stuffing Mrs. Hudson was preparing for our New Year's goose. Suddenly there came a frantic jangle of the front door bell.
No, definitely no.
No what, Holmes?
Whoever it is that's pulling our front door bell out by the roots and whatever his problem is, I'm definitely not interested. Yes, Watson, being the world's greatest consulting detective has its disadvantages. People always manage to get into difficulties at the most inopportune moments.
Yes, you should try being a doctor, Holmes. No female since Eve has ever decided to become a mother at a convenient time.
Oh, come in, confound it.
Mr. Holmes? Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Naturally. Whatever your problem is, I warn you, it'll have to wait till after the holidays.
But it can't wait, Mr. Holmes. Close to 2,000 lives are at stake. I pray to heaven you'll be able to reach them before it's too late.
Reach whom? Where? And what is this disaster you anticipate with such trepidation?
The steamship Gigantic, Mr. Holmes. She should be somewhere off the Scilly Isles by midnight. We've been reliably informed that an attempt will be made to set fire to her at that time. If successful, it'll be the greatest disaster in all maritime history.
Yes, in that case, I suppose I shall have to forego the little celebration I'd planned for this evening.
Have to? Well, really, Holmes, you are a cold-blooded fish.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't believe you've met my colleague, Dr. Watson.
Pembroke. Reginald Pembroke.
How do you do, sir?
I'm chairman of the board of Floyd's, the famous insurance company.
Oh, then your desire to prevent this disaster isn't entirely humanitarian.
Not entirely, but neither is it altogether mercenary. There's more at stake than the lives of the passengers on board the Gigantic. If she goes down, the financial stability of the British Empire goes with her.
Interesting, eh, Watson? Continue, Mr. Pembroke.
You may not be aware, Mr. Holmes, that during this past year, there have been a terrifying number of marine catastrophes.
Holmes knows everything, Mr. Pembroke.
I'm quite cognizant of the fact that quite a few of the newest and fastest British liners have been destroyed at sea by fire, storm, and accident.
Ah, they weren't accidents, Mr. Holmes, I assure you.
Quite. The Egyptian Star was destroyed by fire in the Persian Gulf. 800 lives lost. The Lord Nelson disappeared in a typhoon in the Indian Ocean. No survivors. The Southern Cross exploded and sank off the coast of Brazil. 1,200 casualties. The Wellington, the Lady Jane Grey, and the El Dorado all caught fire in different parts of the Pacific. Total deaths, over 2,000. The greatest disaster was last April, when the Titanic ran into an iceberg with a loss of over 1,500 souls.
The public's becoming panicky about traveling on British ships. The ships of other nationalities are taking all our trade. 3 banks and nearly 10 investment concerns where large marine interests have gone to the wall. Even Floyd's is not too secure. But that is not the most serious aspect of the situation.
Really?
Good Lord, don't tell me there's worse to come.
Much worse, Dr. Watson. Those ships disappeared in many parts of the world. They were sunk by diverse methods. One factor, however, was the same in each disaster.
And that was?
The cargo carried by each ship was gold. English gold.
Oh.
If it ever became known how much British bullion lies at the bottom of the seven seas, British credit would be badly crippled. As a matter of fact, the Bank of England has been forced to import a large shipment of gold from Canada.
And it's on the Gigantic. Good Lord, no wonder you're upset.
The whole economic structure of the British Empire is at stake, Mr. Holmes. Nothing must happen to the Gigantic.
What makes you think anything will?
A cable was sent shortly after the Gigantic left Queenstown. She makes a stop in Ireland on her eastbound voyage, you know. She sails shortly before dawn this morning. The gangplanks have been drawn in, the last line have been cast off, and the great propellers have begun to churn. Suddenly the dockmaster noticed someone sliding down the ship's side on a rope.
Hi, look up there, sir. Some fool's climbed over the side. He's coming down on a rope.
Go back, you fool. Go back. He'll be killed.
He'll never make the dock. He'll fall in the water and be swept under the ship.
No, no. He's pushing the rope away from the ship with his feet. He's swinging out. He's going to jump.
He made it.
Someone up on the bridge has seen him. He's calling to him.
The chap's picked himself up. He's shouting back.
Happy New Year to you up there. Happy New Year. In hell?
Good Lord, I know the man, sir. It's Smoky Joe, the firebug. If the Gigantic don't catch fire between here and Southampton, I'm a Dutchman.
Smoky Joe. Seems to me we've heard of him before, eh, Watson? Not merely as an expert arsonist, but a dangerous pyromaniac as well. They caught him, I hope, Mr. Pembroke.
No, no, Mr. Holmes. Unfortunately, he was too quick for them. He crawled down a ladder and disappeared among the pilings under the docks.
So, the Gigantic is headed for Southampton with a nice bit of Joe's handiwork aboard.
You think it's a firebomb, eh, Holmes?
Not necessarily, Watson. There are many ingenious ways of starting a fire, you know. Whoever hired Joe would prefer to have it happen well out to sea, I imagine.
Our thought exactly, Mr. Holmes. We've wirelessed Captain Brooks to make a search, of course, but on a ship the size of the Gigantic, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. You are our one hope, Mr. Holmes. If only you couldn't get on board in time.
And how do you suggest I go about that little assignment?
The chairman of the Great Western Railway has placed the Royal Train at your disposal. All other traffic will be cleared off the tracks. Now, you should reach Land's End shortly after lunch. My yacht, the Albatross, will be waiting for you in the harbor at St. Ives. It's a very speedy little craft, and with any luck, you should sight the Gigantic around 11 o'clock tonight.
Yes, 11 o'clock. Was it Smoky Joe called out? Happy New Year in hell. It won't be New Year till midnight. If we reach the Gigantic by 11, we may just possibly be in time. Six bells. It's 11 o'clock. Confound this fog. We've had to reduce our speed to half.
Oh, we'll never catch up to the Gigantic now, Holmes.
Nonsense. She's had to slow down, too. I only hope we don't miss her entirely in this fog.
I don't really care.
You don't sound very fit, Watson. What's up?
Do you have to use that unfortunate expression?
And tell me you're feeling squeamish.
It's this confounded roll. I can stand a good brisk sea, but this bobbing about in a teacup. It's
pity I didn't bring the Mother Sills seasick pills.
Oh, Mother Sills, bah. There's only one remedy for this sort of thing.
What's that?
Staying on shore. Jolly way to spend New Year's Eve, this is. Who do you suppose is responsible for these confounded sinkings, anyway?
Mr. Pembroke seems to feel it's a foreign plot. The Middle East European shipping industries benefit the most, of course.
Holmes, did you hear that?
By Jove, yes.
Sounds like an ocean liner, right enough.
Yes, we're signaling her.
Scott, there she is, the Gigantic looming out of the fog. Looks like a mountain coming at us.
Ahoy there! You there, Frost?
Yes, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson coming aboard. Let down a ladder.
Ladder coming over! Look out below!
Here's the ladder, Watson. Think you can manage it?
I'd climb up the Eiffel Tower on a clothesline if it would get me off this bouncing coffer shell.
Quite an impressive array of instruments you have up here on the bridge, Captain Brooks.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. On the Gigantic, we have the latest of everything. And none of it's any real use in case of fire. I'd sooner face a typhoon or a shipwreck or a mutiny even, dod rat it, than a fire on board ship.
But surely a ship this size should be fairly fireproof.
That's what you might think, Dr. Watson. But there are three factors that make a fire on a luxury liner dangerous. First, there's all the confounded ornamental woodwork that's used in a passenger construction. Second, there's the fact that once a fire gets a firm hold, it's fed by drafts that rush through the ventilating system. And third, there is the element of panic. Nothing makes people behave more like wild beasts quicker than the cry of fire.
In case of fire, you have, of course, an alarm system.
Oh, we have the old-fashioned system of bells, and also something rather recent. The Gigantic is one of the first ships to install it. You see that glass case over there, gentlemen?
The one with a lot of tubes entering from below. Looks rather like a giant honeycomb, eh, Holmes?
Each of those tubes leads to a separate compartment of the ship. The instant a fire breaks out anywhere, smoke is immediately drawn up into the glass case. I've stationed a sailor to watch that case. Believe me, gentlemen, the first wisp of smoke, we shall know it.
Yes, undoubtedly very helpful, Captain Brooks, in the case of an ordinary conflagration. But I assure you, a fire set by Smoky Joe is not ordinary. He's a master arsonist. 10 seconds after one of his fires breaks out, you're dealing with a raging inferno.
Oh, confound it, they tell me the man deserted the ship at Queenstown. That news this morning. Well, that's more than 18 hours ago. If he'd set fire, it seems to me that we'd be in flames by this time.
Not necessarily. There are many methods by which a fire can be made to break out long after the pyromaniac has left the scene of his crime. You say you found no time bombs, no inflammable acids.
No, Mr. Holmes. Ever since I received word that we were in danger, I've had my men searching high and low. They found nothing, absolutely nothing. It's been a systematic search, I promise you.
Yes, but you've drawn a blank. That's what comes of using system instead of brains and initiative.
Oh? And how do you propose to locate whatever it is we can't find?
By using a little logic. I shall credit Smoky Joe with having the intelligence to place his fire-starting device in the place where it'll do the most damage. The man's no amateur, Captain. He knows his business. Then I shall investigate that place and remove his handiwork.
Holmes, you're bragging again.
Not at all, my dear Watson. I think I may promise I shall have discovered the menace inside of half an hour. I only hope Joe's little device doesn't do its nasty job before then.
Half an hour. It's now 11:30 exactly. You think you can solve this problem by midnight?
Yes, Captain. With any luck, I think I can promise you a placid and uneventful New Year.
Captain Brooks.
Yes, Mr. Brown. What seems to be the trouble?
The wireless engineer, sir, wishes to report that something's wrong with his apparatus. Both the sending and receiving equipment have suddenly gone out of commission.
I don't like that.
What does he think is
the matter? Pardon me, Captain. Can you come here a minute?
Excuse me a moment, gentlemen. The wheelsman is calling me. What's the trouble, Jerry?
It's the compass, sir. It's spinning like a top. I can't figure out what's got into it. Never seen the like except once in some magnetic storm.
Great Scott, this is incredible. Now what?
It's the engine room calling, Captain. I'll take it. Hello? Yes, Captain Brooks speaking.
The blazes, you say. Well, do the best you can.
Seems to be the difficulty, Captain. The dynamos are slowing down. They can't figure out why.
Good Lord, sir. That's why the lights are getting dim.
The blazes with the lights. Without dynamos, we've no forced draft for the furnaces. We'll never keep up enough steam pressure to drive the ship. In no time at all, we'll be drifting helplessly in the Atlantic, in the middle of the reefs that surround the Scilly Isles.
Jolly way to spend New Year's Eve, eh, Holmes?
It could be worse, you know.
How?
The ship could be on fire. That's the real menace, to which these other threats are but the prelude, I fancy.
For the love of heaven, what are we to do?
Keep calm and use whatever intelligence the Lord has endowed us with. Captain Brooks, I suggest you and as many officers as you can spare join the holiday celebration that's undoubtedly going on in order to keep discipline in case there's any disturbance.
Very good, Mr. Holmes. There's a New Year's dance going on in the large ballroom. It's on sea deck.
And meanwhile, if you can spare us someone to guide Watson and myself.
Oh, of course. And Mr. Brown here is our purser. He knows the ship as well as anyone aboard.
I'm sure he does. Very well, Mr. Brown. If you'll lead the way, I think Dr. Watson and I would like to go below.
And investigate the engines?
No, Mr. Brown, even lower than that. What we're looking for is apt to be rather close to the furnaces, I imagine.
Oh, these iron stairs that go round and round and make me dizzy. Well, maybe it's the heat down here.
Yes, we're getting close to the furnace room. If you listen, you can hear the men stoking.
Grim way to earn a living, eh, Holmes?
Stop a minute. Where does that lead, Mr. Brown? That small corridor with a heavy metal door at the far end.
That's the bullion room, sir, where the gold is kept.
Very interesting. Suppose we take a look, eh, Watson?
Yes, I've always wanted to see those gold bars you hear so much about.
I'm afraid that won't be possible, Dr. Watson.
Why not?
Well, as you can see, the door is locked and sealed. It was done by the port authorities before we left New York. That door won't be opened until the port authorities unseal it when we reach Southampton.
You mean that room in there wasn't opened when the captain ordered the ship searched for incendiary material?
No, Mr. Holmes. But it's quite impossible for anyone to place a firebomb or anything of the sort in there. As you can see, the seals are still intact.
Quite. These seals are intact. But are they the ones put on in New York? I doubt it. Let's have a look. Yes, interesting. Very interesting. These are not the original seals.
Oh, how can you tell, Holmes? They look intact to me.
Exactly, they are intact. But here in the crack of the door sill are bits of broken seals. But these seals are not even chipped.
By Jove, yes, of course. The original seals were hacked off and then replaced after someone had finished picking the lock and robbing the room inside.
I doubt if robbery was the motive, Watson.
Well, for what other reason would anyone want to break into a room full of gold bullion?
It all depends. What lies directly below that room, Mr. Brown?
Let me see. Well, nothing of any great importance, Mr. Holmes. Just the coal piles.
The coal piles? Good Lord. I think we shall have to break the seals again, Mr. Brown. Here, Watson, help me.
The door is locked, Mr. Holmes. Even after the seals have been removed, we shall have to get the key from the captain.
No time for that. Hand me my burglar tools, Watson.
All right, very well.
But, good heavens, you mean you could actually pick a lock with those things?
If Holmes ever turned thief, Mr. Brown, even the Bank of England wouldn't be safe.
Yes, that should do the trick. Now, if you'll help me draw the bars, Watson.
Yes, with pleasure. Well, there you are, Holmes.
Now, let's see.
It's black in there, isn't it?
Is there a light inside, Mr. Brown?
No, Mr. Holmes, I'm afraid not.
Then we shall have to prop the door open. The light from the corridor will have to do for our investigations. Come on, Watson.
Holmes, that smell. Phew. Strong and acrid. Like sulfur, only with more bite.
Seems to be coming from this large tin. Suppose I light a match.
Oh, this is village! Stop!
Don't be alarmed. I know better than to light a match around a tin which is leaking sulfuric acid. I only wanted to know how much you knew about Smokey Joe's incendiary device, Mr. Ludwig Brown, spelled B-R-A-U-N, if I'm not mistaken.
So you recognize me?
Yes, that dueling scar over your left eye. It's rather a giveaway, don't you know?
So you have found how we are going to set fire to the ship by having the acid drip through a hole in the floor onto the coal beneath. The first shovelful of that acid soaked coal that goes in the furnace, and the hold of a ship will be a blazing inferno. Nothing could put out that fire.
Don't you mean that's how you were going to start the fire?
My dear Mr. Holmes, you do not think we will let a small obstacle like the famous Sherlock Holmes stand in our way?
Now listen to me.
Don't raise your fist to me or I'll let you have it.
Never argue with a Luger pistol, Watson.
Well, it's the first sensible remark you've made, Mr. Holmes. I'm sorry to leave, but the stokers should reach the sulfuric acid impregnated coal in about 10 minutes, I believe. So I must be going. This room will be a roaring oven once it starts. You'll be rather badly overdone, gentlemen. Goodbye, then. So sorry I cannot say auf Wiedersehen.
The door. He's bolted it. Even you can't open it now, Holmes.
Shut up, Watson, and help me look for the opening.
What opening, for heaven's sake?
The opening that leads to the tube that ends in the captain's new fire-detecting machine. It should be somewhere near the ceiling.
But, Holmes, I can't see a thing in this black hole of Calcutta.
You can feel, can't you?
Not a thing, Holmes. The wall on this side of the room, it's as smooth as an egg.
Confound it, if we could see for half a minute, it would... Hello, I've got something.
Yes?
Yes, a small grating here in the upper corner. This must be it. Now, if we can make a smudge of some sort. Watson, bring me a piece of paper.
Paper? Where would I find a piece of paper?
Then bring me anything I can burn. A bit of cloth, a piece of... Yes, by Jove, rope. Bring me a piece of the rope that's tied around one of the boxes that contain the bullion.
Very well, if I can find a box that...
Oof! Now what?
I found it. Confound it. The knots are tied so tight.
It blazes with knots. Cut the rope, Watson. Use your pocket knife.
Oh, very well. There you are, Holmes. It's a short length, I'm afraid.
I only want enough for a smudge. Nothing like a bit of hempen rope to...
Holmes, for heaven's sake, you're not going to set a match to that thing in here. There'll be an explosion.
Have to take the chance, Watson. With any luck, the sulfuric acid fumes won't be too concentrated up here near the ceiling. Well, here goes. One, two. Now, if we can persuade the rope to smolder. Yes, there she goes.
Certainly makes plenty of smoke, eh, Holmes?
The important thing, it's being drawn up through the grating.
How long before they come to investigate, do you suppose?
It all depends on the mental acumen of the sailor who's watching that fire-detecting machine.
Well, let's hope he's brighter than he looks. It may be my imagination, but it seems to me I can... feel the metal flooring under my feet beginning to get hot. Good Lord. How long does it take for them to get us out of here? That smoke's suffocating.
Calm yourself, Watson. It can't be more than 3 minutes since we lit this smudge. Yes, I can hear someone running down the iron staircase.
I can't hear a blasted thing. How do you...
Hello? Hello in there?
Get us out.
We're in here.
Open the door. What a relief.
How in thunder did you two get locked in here? What's all the smoke?
No time for explanations, Captain. Stop them stoking the furnaces. Flood the coal piles with water. They've been soaked with sulfuric acid.
Good Lord.
Gates, stop the firing. Stop the pumps in the engine room.
Well, that's that, Holmes. What do you suppose has become of that dastardly purser?
We let Captain Brooks take care of him, Watson. Unless I'm very much mistaken, Mr. Brown is going to wish he'd never gone to sea. Well, come along. Let's go upstairs and join the festivities. I think we rate a bottle of champagne.
Well, to blazes with the champagne, I need a double brandy. Eight bells. Let's see, that'll be...
Midnight, Watson. Happy New Year, old fellow.
Happy New Year, Holmes, and many of them. But, don't you think you could manage to have them not quite so hair-raising?
And have you getting fat and lethargic? You know, that would be unhealthy, not to say boring.
Oh, so now it's for my sake we indulge in all these horrendous escapades, eh? Fine bit of logic, that is.
Elementary, my dear Watson. Elementary. But here's the ballroom. Suppose we join the party.
Fine, my dear. Oh, and so.
Dr. Watson, that was an exciting way to spend New Year's Eve.
It was a bit too exciting, Mr. Harris, if you ask me.
Doctor, did they catch the purser?
Oh, they did indeed. Mr. Brown and five of his accomplices were thrown in the brig. That was the end of the disasters in the British Maritime Service.
When did Holmes first suspect the purser was the villain of the piece?
When he came out of the bridge and threw his overcoat on a chair near to the compass, whereupon the compass went berserk. Holmes immediately suspected the coat contained a powerful magnet of some sort.
And was he right, Doctor?
My dear Mr. Harris, was Sherlock Holmes ever wrong? But come, fill your mug and let us wish our radio friends a prosperous, happy and peaceful New Year.
Indeed we do, Doctor. And now, Dr. Watson, would you like to give us a hint about next week's story?
Next week, I think I'll tell you how Holmes and I trapped a famous jewel thief right in our own rooms in Baker Street by the use of what was then a fabulous new invention, the gramophone.
Makers of Clipper Craft Clothes and 924 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Ockren with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clipper Craft dealer, write Clipper Craft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Mazarin Stone. If you'd like to attend the Sherlock Holmes broadcasts in New York, see your local Clipper Craft dealer and he'll tell you how to obtain your tickets.
That is The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes with John Stanley and Alfred Shirley, December 28, 1947, the New Year's Eve off the Scilly Isles.
Ugh, it's very, very silly.
It was very, you know, it was very silly.
Michael Fitzmaurice, the announcer.
Michael Fitzmaurice. There was two announcers on there. There was Cy Harris and also Michael Fitzmaurice.
Oh, yeah.
And it was brought to you by Clipper Craft Clothes. Can you say that five times fast?
I could, but I'm choosing not to.
Wayne Mesmer is my co-host all the way till 3 o'clock in the morning.
You slipped.
Lisa is...
You were so good up to this point.
Wayne Mesmer.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Lisa Wolf is on vacation, and which gives us the opportunity to commiserate and talk about these great classic radio shows.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing to do on a Saturday night. You know, I remember doing overnights and always... hoping that I was, you know, actually speaking to someone and not just listening to myself and whatever headphones I was so vainly wearing at the time.
Yeah, well, you're talking to a lot of people because this is 40 plus states, plus Canada, plus Mexico. This is a blowtorch, as you know. Blowtorch here on WGN.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun.
WGN.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the callers. And being a Chicago guy, yeah. Like both of us, like the both of us.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know, to hear these shows on WGN, I think is also pretty important.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate the fact that they give us 5 hours to sort of, as an homage to these great radio shows, they give us five straight hours. We get to play the shows uninterrupted now, which is so great, because before we used to have to break the shows for news at the bottom of the hour.
Oh.
I'm so glad that we don't have to do that anymore. So
I'm
really, yeah, I'm really, yeah, really happy we don't have to do that.
It does make a difference when you hear these, with the commercials stripped out anyway.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
You know, and now back to whatever, and
right.
I didn't know we left.
Yeah, the only commercials we have to remove are the cigarette commercials. So we play all the, we heard you weird some Clipper Craft clothes spots there and all that good stuff. All right, we're going to be back with Wayne right after these words. My co-host Wayne Mesmer is here till 3 o'clock in the morning with me. Great honor to have you on the air with me, Wayne.
You're so kind.
How do people get a hold of you? Is there a website?
Yeah, how about WayneMesmer.com?
All right, so WayneMesmer.com.
Two S's.
And you do a lot of speaking. You will speak at events. You will talk to, you will educate people. You, obviously, you're known for singing the national anthem, probably have sung the national anthem more than anyone on the planet. I'm guessing.
About 5,000 times.
Wow.
It's a good estimate. Yeah.
Now, you sing the national anthem at the Wolves games.
Correct.
You are one of the founding members of the Wolves.
Founding partner.
Founding partner. Yeah. So you do all those home games. You sing the national anthem at the home games.
Yeah, out at the Allstate Arena, including, we're not quite ready to say today, but Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, at
3 o'clock game, yeah. Right? Now, when they go on the road, you have somebody that...
No, that's whatever team's...
Whatever team, they'll sing it. Great. Well, they're not singing it like Wayne Messmer. I'm sorry. Nobody sings the national anthem like you. And you have a special way you do the end is amazing. Anyone listening here has heard Wayne. And now for a lot of years, you sang for the Cubs. And do you still sing for the Cubs?
Still do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Heading into the 36th year with the Cubs.
Unbelievable.
Which has been, you know, it's been opening day all of those years, too.
It's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. You know, I mean, to know that you've been given a gift and then to have the opportunity to do it. And we were talking about being a couple of Chicago guys.
Mm-hmm.
But to bloom where you're planted is a wonderful feeling.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a nice town to be blooming in. I mean, this is true. Second City right here. You've been around and doing this for a long time. But how we met is because Wayne had a classic radio show, and he has a love for these classic radio shows. And I really learned a lot about classic radio through you, Wayne, and your show.
Well, those were fun times. I mean, I was doing what you're doing now,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting to know the shows and getting to really like them and like the characters, to know more about them. And, you know, entertained by them. I mean, being a singer, I like the variety shows.
Sure.
But the comedies were great. And I mean, the mysteries, you know, the Western. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, and the next thing you know, you're going, I'm not getting out of TV
mm-hmm.
what I am out of this. And the theater of the mind and
theater
all of
mind.
That. But that's truly what it is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tell people, well, you know, you weren't around. I wasn't around when these shows first aired, but we were exposed to them. And I think this show, 5 hours a week on Saturday nights, exposes a lot of people to these shows, and they become fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to hear these shows.
Yeah.
And our next hour, our favorite, one of our favorite, The Great Gildersleeve. Then after that, Our Miss Brooks, and then Father Knows Best. Wayne Messmer's here. Stick around. Lou's making me hungry there, talking about food.
I was hungry when I came in. Right away, I'm asking about pizza. But,
I have some treats over here. We'll warm some up when we are playing Gildersleeve in this hour. Yay, Leroy. You know, years ago, I went to one of these, and I've talked about this on the air, Wayne. You'll get a kick out of this. I went to one of these reenactments, you know, these Friends of Old Time Radio conventions.
Right.
I believe it was in Ohio. And Willard Waterman was there.
All right.
And so was Shirley Mitchell. She played Leela.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
And they did a reenactment, and they allowed some of the people to audition. And so, of course, my hand was up, you know, I wanted to audition. And I won the role of Leroy. So I got to stand next to Willard Waterman. Was really tall. He was like a 6'4 guy, right? And I played Leroy next to Willard Waterman and Shirley Mitchell as Leela Ransom. One of the highlights of my life.
I can see why.
Right?
Well, you actually, because you did step in for a guy who was one of the most talented people on radio, you know, and
Walter Tetley.
And yeah. I believe at the time of this was about 36 years old.
Yes, he was doing this as an adult.
Yeah.
He was playing Leroy as an adult.
Yeah, of course, when he's Julius.
Yeah, Julius Abruzzo is a little more of a wisecracker.
Yeah.
And then he was... Sherman.
He was Sherman.
Yeah, was Sherman on the, what was that?
The Bullwinkle Show. Actually, it was the Rocky and Friends.
Was it Rocky and Friends?
Rocky and his friends, but mostly known as the Bullwinkle Show.
Right. Wayne Messmer here with me all the way to 3 o'clock in the morning is my co-host tonight, Lisa Wolf on vacation. Gildersleeve coming your way. We have all New Year's shows. We have a New Year's Eve party show with Gildy, then Our Miss Brooks, and then Father Knows Best. If you want to get a hold of Wayne Messmer, you can do so by going to waynemessmer.com. Now, you came here directly from Wrigley Field officiating a wedding.
That would be an accurate statement.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
So,
yeah, really nice couple who she attended Illinois Wesleyan University, where I went, and he and she were engaged in at Wrigley Field.
Wow.
And so the Wesleyan Cubs connection somehow, and she tracked me down, and this is not the first by any means.
Right. You've done this a lot. Now, so someone can go to your website, get you to officiate a wedding. You'll do keynote speaking. You have a book. The book is amazing. The Voice of Victory is the book, Wayne
Mesmer.
The book.
Yeah, available. That one's at Amazon.
Yeah, but go to WayneMesmer.com, folks. Check out all the things Wayne's doing. And busy guy, you're a busy guy, so taking time out to come here, I really appreciate it, Wayne. Also, you have a radio show every Sunday night on WDCB, which is 90.9 FM. And Wayne invites you in to his lounge.
My radio
right?
lounge.
Radio lounge. Plays jazz music for you.
Yeah, good stuff. It's kind of like the, I own the room. It's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
You know, my piano.
Is there shag carpeting? Real thick shag?
No, that's been taken out, but okay. We do have some love sacks.
Ah, is there any lava lamps?
Oh, there has to be.
Oh, yeah. There's incense.
Are you kidding me?
Little incense going.
Oh, yeah.
Incense. And
yeah.
then it's.
I'm glad you repeated that.
And you have like a maybe a like a disco ball or
no
disco ball.
No, but very indirect lighting. And I will tell you the piano, I may have said this already, but unquestionably always in tune.
Yes.
And it's
not like the NBC chimes earlier.
No, this would be like coming into Hef's hangout.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and you say,
I'm there.
Hey, man.
You say Hef, and I'm there.
I know, Daddy Opa. But you want to say, you know, why don't you play? Hey, who's going to play the piano? Oh, look at that. Errol Garner? Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa, George Shearing. Anybody want to sing? Mel Torme, why don't you sing with George Shearing?
Wow. This sounds great.
You know?
7 p.m. till 8 p.m. Sunday nights, WDCB. You can hear Wayne's show. And it's,
or even on, you know, it streams as well.
WDCB.org. Well. Hear some great jazz.
Yeah.
Wow, it's great. And make sure you check out the website, WayneMesmer.com. All right, in this hour, the great Gildersleeve, but right now we are going to play our game.
Not again.
Yeah, again. Guess that song. Two songs we'll give you from 1975, and you're going to win Twilight Zone radio drama CDs. You will get a 4-CD set of the Twilight Zone, and I'll send them out to you myself. So call us now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and we'll take caller number 4. We're going to play the game right after these words. Oh, do we got the theme?
Guess that song.
Got to have the theme. I mean, I'm paying Roger royalty every time this, so might as well play it, right?
I was not even going to participate if there's no theme.
Yeah, there's got to be a theme. We have Jeffrey from Hammond. How you doing, Jeffrey?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. You're speaking to Wayne Mesmer here.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Yeah, hello there.
All right, you ready to play the game with us?
Well, the best that I'm gonna.
Well, you got Wayne as a lifeline, so you're in good hands.
I know the answer. So
here's the first song. All right, what do you think?
Cool in the Gang.
Close, but no cigar.
Irving Berlin.
Irving Berlin. Now let's play a little bit more of it.
The Sunshine Band.
Mm-mm. Wayne, you know this one?
I'm letting my poor guy just wallow around here.
I know it. I know it.
You know it? All right, what is it? No.
I'm sorry.
It's Shining Star, Earth, Wind, and Fire. These are tough ones, huh?
I think that's what you meant to say, I'm pretty sure, right, Jeffrey?
Yeah.
That's what I'm...
Yeah.
All right. Here we got another one for you. Here's another 1975 tune.
I needed the shelter of someone's arms. There you were.
What do you think?
I can't think of it. I know the song. I can't think of
it. It's a great song.
You know, did you ever know a president by the first name of Zachary?
Zachary. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I do not know who that is.
Who's the sheriff in Mayberry?
Mayberry RFD.
Andy, what's his character name?
Barney.
That's it. Barney. We're going to let that one go.
Let's play some more of it.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
There it is.
Jeffrey, if you were to have a pair of your trousers shortened, where would you go?
I don't know.
Maybe a tailor?
A tailor. Definitely a tailor, but spelled a little different than Taylor.
Taylor.
You got it. Way to go, my friend. You're going to win some Twilight Zone CDs. Jeffrey, thanks for playing the game with us. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. All right.
Good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Big winner. Way to go. All right. We'll have two more songs in our next hour. But right now, it's time for Gildersleeve. Let's go back to, actually, New Year's Day. January 1st, 1947. There's a big New Year's party going on. And Hal Perry, who originated this role on what show? You know this. He originated the role before he had his own show. He was a character on...
Oh, of course, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Yes.
But they didn't use the word spinoff then, did they?
No, they probably didn't, but it was the first one.
Yeah,
first spinoff. So this is Kraft.
I hope Peavy is at the party.
Yeah, he's probably there.
Hello, Gildy.
Hello, sweetums. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that.
The Jolly Boys.
Sponsored by Kraft. Here is Uninterrupted, the New Year's Eve show on The Great Gildersleeve.
The Kraft Foods Company presents The Great Gildersleeve. It's The Great Gildersleeve, starring Harold Perry, brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company, makers of parquet margarine and a complete line of famous quality food products.
Yeah, Happy New Year. I'm making no resolutions this year. I'm just going to be a bad boy. That's my only resolution. I'm going to be a bad boy.
What a terrible way to start the new year. But before we condemn our hero, let us review the tragic events which have put him in this desperate frame of mind. It all started with Gildersleeve's plans for Summerfield's annual costume ball. When he got his costume, he naturally wanted to tell somebody about it.
Well, I won't actually tell her. That would be against the rules. I'll just let her guess. She'll never guess in a million years. Avast there, me proud beauty. Open the hatch before I blow it in. 15 men on a dead man's chest. Yo-ho, yo-ho, in a bottle of hello, Eve.
Why, Throckmorton.
Got my costume for tomorrow night, Eve. Right here under my arm.
Oh, no, you mustn't tell me what it is, Throckmorton. That would spoil all the fun. No one's supposed to know who anyone is till the time comes for the unmasking.
Well, I wasn't going to tell you, Eve, but wouldn't you like to guess?
Well, come in anyway.
Thanks. Well, take my coat off. Got to be getting right along home. Well, go ahead and guess, Eve.
Oh, I don't think that would be fair, Throckmorton. You might start hinting.
Oh, go on. Guess what I'm going to be.
Humpty Dumpty.
Why do you guess that?
I don't know. He's kind of roly-poly, and you asked me to guess.
Guess again.
Henry VIII?
Well, I get mixed up on those kings. Which one is he?
The fat one. The one with all the wives. You know, he...
Why do you guess only fat people?
Well, I've guessed only two, and you insisted on my guessing, you know.
All right, I'll give you a little help. 50 men...
No, you don't. Now, be fair, Throckmorton. I want it to be a surprise.
But, Eve, the whole thing's a lot of nonsense. As soon as I call for you tomorrow evening, that'll give the whole thing away. By the way, what time do you want me to call for you?
You were planning to call for me?
Oh, of course.
Oh, I wish I'd known that before.
Of course I'm going to call for you if I'm taking you to the ball.
I didn't know you were taking me to the ball. Oh, I'm afraid it's too late now.
What?
You never asked me, Throckmorton. You never did.
Well, gosh,
I waited and you never asked me.
Gosh, I took it for granted that you and me, I mean, you and I...
And I took it for granted since I never heard from you that you'd invited someone else. So I accepted another invitation.
Listen, you sold me the tickets to this thing. I had a right to assume you were going with me.
Well, I sold over 50 tickets, Throckmorton. I couldn't go with all of them.
Nuts. Gosh, if I'd had the slightest idea, Eve. I mean, I've got my costume here and everything. You couldn't just...
Not now. I couldn't possibly.
Hmm.
I'm sorry. But when you're inviting a lady to something, it's customary to invite everyone.
Hmm. I suppose you're going with that gym teacher again.
He was kind enough to invite me. And he's very nice, really. I'm sorry there was a misunderstanding, Throckmorton. I'll save you a dance if you like.
Don't bother.
Oh, now, Throckmorton, don't be a baby.
Who's a baby? I was going to be a pirate, but now I won't be anything. Won't even be there.
Hello, Miss Fenwick? How'd you guess? I bet you're surprised to hear from me. Say, do you happen to be doing anything this evening? Oh, you are, Well, I just thought... Well, same to you, Miss Fenwick. Nuts. What's the matter with this town? New Year's Eve and everybody's going someplace. Oh, well...
Leroy, will you tell me what you're doing running around in my long underwear?
That's not underwear. I'm Captain Marvel.
And that bath towel?
That's my cape.
Look here, young man.
You want to see one of my mighty feats of strength? I can make this whole house disintegrate. All I have to do is say, Shazam!
Leroy?
Ooh, I said it. Lucky thing the house didn't hear me.
Calm down, will you? What are you getting dressed up for anyway? You're not going anyplace.
I know, but everybody else is. Gosh, I want to have some fun.
I'll be here with you, my boy, the whole evening.
That's no fun.
What?
I mean, I thought you were going to the ball.
Ball? I'm doing nothing of the kind.
But I thought...
I decided the whole thing was silly, childish. I didn't want to go in the first place.
Marge is going.
Oh, no, she's not.
She is, too. She's going with Jerry Walsh.
Now, look here. I had this whole thing out 2 days ago.
Don't holler at me. I'm not the one.
Go upstairs and tell your sister to come down here.
Hey, Marge! Oh. Come down here!
I said go up and tell her.
She heard me. What do you want? I'll watch you!
I don't know what I have to do to get obedience around here. Marjorie, what's this I hear?
About what?
About your planning to go to the ball this evening with that Walsh boy?
Leroy.
I didn't say anything. I mean, I didn't mean to make any trouble, Marge. I just said what you said.
Never mind that. The point is, I told you 2 days ago, my dear, you were not going to that ball.
But, Unky, it's the first thing Jerry's ever invited me to. He's one of the stars of the basketball team. If I turn him down at the last minute, he'll
you
ever
could have...
You
turned him down 2 days ago. I told you then.
You said you'd think it over. You said you'd see.
I said no. Besides, I've thought it over. The ball is no place for a girl your age. It's apt to turn out to be a very rowdy affair. That's why I'm not going myself.
I think you're mean.
Moreover, I don't want you going around with that Jerry Walsh. From what I hear, he's inclined to be wild. All basketball players are wild. One of the wildest boys I ever knew was a basketball player.
Oh, why don't you let her go?
Listen, who's running this house, you or me?
I didn't know anybody was running it.
You go upstairs.
To bed now?
Well, go away anyway. This is just between your sister and me.
Sorry, Marge.
Go on, Leroy. Disintegrate. Shazam!
Okay. Telephone!
We heard it.
I'll get it. Hello?
Hey, Unc, you want to play me checkers?
Quiet, Leroy. I can't hear.
Not now, Leroy.
Later, huh? Later, will you play me checkers?
Leroy!
We'll see, Leroy.
I'll set up the checkerboard just in case.
Will everybody kindly, for heaven's sake, be quiet? Francie? I can't go. My uncle.
Yes, yes.
I know. And what do I tell Jerry? The first thing he's ever invited me to. I mean, I'll be so humiliated I'll just die.
Yes, yes.
My costume? I don't know. Burn it, I guess. What good is it now?
Costume, eh? Didn't know it'd gone as far as that. Well, I can't give in now.
Now, that is not true, Francis. My uncle is really very nice if you know him. It's just about this one thing. He seems to be a little old-fashioned.
You needn't look at me, my dear. You have my decision.
Well, I don't know. He's being so stuffy about everything these days, but I'll ask him. Uncle Mort, if I can't go to the ball, can I at least go over to Francie's and spend the night?
Oh, so Francie's mother wouldn't let her go to the thing either, eh? I told you it was no place for young girls.
Well, may I?
I see no objection, as long as you're in bed by a reasonable hour.
Miracles will happen, Francie. He said yes. I'll be right over. What?
Excuse me.
Well, Bertie, you're all dressed up.
Yes, sir.
You look super, Bertie. I wouldn't know you.
Well, thank you, Leroy. You look well yourself.
You mean my football helmet?
I don't think he's had that off since Christmas.
Yeah, take it off, Leroy. You want to be bald?
Okay, goodbye, Francie. Be right over.
Mr. Gillsleeve, I'd like to take this opportunity to wish you a happy and prosperous New Year. Is it all right if I go now?
Yeah, same to you, Bertie, and you go right ahead. Yeah, by the way, where are you going?
Well, it's starting over to Jack Chase's house. Goodness knows where it'll wind up.
Oh, well, I suppose that's your idea of a way to have a good time. My idea of the way to spend New Year's Eve is just sitting quietly here by the radio, laying plans for next year.
Well, a man can't break any bones that way. Enjoy yourself, Miss Gilfley.
Yeah, you too, Bertie. Happy New Year.
Hey, aren't you going to play checkers? I've got the board all set up.
Oh, I suppose so. Just when I'm sitting down.
I'll let you have the first move.
Oh? Well, there.
I expected that.
I suppose she's leaving by now. With that gym teacher.
Your move, Unc.
Oh? They'll all be there. Eve, Floyd, Evie, Hooker. All of them. Everybody but me.
Yours, Unc.
What's that?
Your move.
Oh. Well.
Ha!
Leroy, it's your bedtime.
You haven't got your mind on the game, Unc.
I'll admit I haven't got my mind on the game, but you go to bed anyway.
Do I have to?
Yes, it's 10:45.
Okay, gosh. Good night, Unc.
Good night, my boy. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. What's happy about it? Marjorie out, Bertie out, Leroy in bed. Well, suppose I could listen to the radio. I've missed a date with Judy, though, and Fibber McGee.
See a little here, all milling about in the street down here below us. As I say, the crowd is milling about in the street here below us, and it is now just about 1 minute to midnight. The crowd waits. Milling about in the street here below us for the new year to come in. Let's listen to him for a moment.
Gosh, it's midnight there already. That means it's 11 here. Clock slow.
Well, it's just about time. It's the moment we've all been waiting for here. So now let's see how they're taking the new year in the dear old South. Taking away Atlanta.
Atlanta? Yeah, Leela could be there.
For your listening pleasure, the music of Matty Copeland and his orchestra coming to you from the glamorous Magnolia Room of the Jefferson House. And now, here's a lovely little lady, one of the guests here. Won't you step up to the microphone, honey? Tell the folks what you think of this celebration.
Well, I just think we're all just having just the loveliest time here. And I just love New Year's. And I just wish you all could be here. Because we're just having the loveliest time. I declare I think...
And there it is. Happy New Year, folks.
That girl. She sounded just like Leela. She couldn't have been, though. Leela. How many New Year's Eves have I spent with Leela? Oh, Lang Syne, my dear. Oh, Lang Syne. We will take a cup of kindness yet.
like fun, we will. Mila, where is she now? Married to somebody else. And Eve stood me up for a gym teacher. Yeah, that's what you get for being a gentleman. After all the nice things you do for them all year. The chips are really down when it's New Year's Eve. What do you get? Left at home, twiddling your thumbs, while they're off cutting up with somebody else. Oh, shut up. Yeah, happy New Year. I'm making no resolutions this year. I'm just going to be a bad boy. That's my only resolution. I'm going to be a bad boy. And by George, I'm going to that ball, too. If nobody wants to go with me, all right. I'll be a lone wolf. Yes, sir. I'll get into my pirate suit and I'll go down there, and if anybody thinks I'm fooling, she'll find out. Pardon me. Pardon me. Hey, look where you're going. Oop. Floor slippery. Better pull for the shore, mate. Join the stag line over by the punch bowl. Pardon me. Pardon me. Well, a fellow pirate. Shiver my timbers in a yo-ho-ho.
Yo-ho-ho yourself.
Peavy, is that you? I never would have known you.
Yeah, it's me, all right.
I'll bet you don't know who I am.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. Happy New Year, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Somebody must have told you. Say, Peavy, I'm looking for the stag line. You know where it is?
Sure, this is it right here.
You mean you're the stag line? Where's Mrs. Peavy?
She's dancing with George Washington. As soon as I can cut him out, we're going home.
George Washington?
Judge Hooker. There they go now. Oh, hello, dear.
Hooker, the old goat, in knee breeches and silk stockings. Well, there's no use standing here moping, Peavy. We're pirates. Let's be pirates. Grab ourselves a couple. Say, how about that lady bareback rider?
I noticed her myself. Interesting costume.
You said it. Come on, let's grab some girls, Peavy.
You grab one. I'll watch.
Huh? Have to wait till the band starts again anyway. Now what?
Ladies and gentlemen, your kind attention, please.
Chief Gates. Is that who it is, Peavy?
That's right. He's the Grand Marshal. Must be going to say something.
Your attention, please. It's been called to my attention that some of the gentlemen have been smoking here in the auditorium. Smoking in the auditorium is against the fire regulations. Gentlemen who wish to smoke will kindly go outside, or they can smoke in the boys' locker room in the southwest corner of the building. I thank you.
Boo.
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, going to try for the bareback rider?
You bet. What's more, I'm going to get her.
Well, go ahead. Here she comes.
Don't worry. I see her. If I can...
Hi, Commissioner. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Peavy.
Happy New Year.
For heaven's sake, another pirate? Is that you, Floyd?
It ain't Captain Kidd. Well, I'll see you later. I got my eye on that lady bareback rider.
Oh, no, you don't. I got my eye on her.
So what? It's a free country.
You're a married man, Floyd. Isn't your wife here?
Sure she's here, but there's no law says I got to dance with her all night.
Well, you lay off that lady bareback rider.
You better get this settled, gentlemen. Here she comes.
Yeah, she's mine. Don't move, Floyd. Pardon me, fair maiden. May I cut in?
Hey, beat it, will you? I just got her a minute ago myself.
That doesn't make any difference. You're supposed to... Nuts.
What happened, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Well, a fella just got her. I decided to give him a break.
Horse feathers. She's just choosy, that's all. I tried her a couple of times myself.
Oh, is that so? Wait till next time around. I'll show you.
Here comes something, Mr. Gildersleeve. In the hula skirt there. Looks pretty good. For you, I mean.
Hula skirt? Say.
Listen, Commissioner, I
don't need any advice or help from you, Floyd.
Okay.
Pardon me, fair maiden. May I cut in?
You sure may.
See you later, pirates.
I'll be darned. He got her.
Yeah, he got her all right. I tried to warn him, but he wouldn't listen.
What do you mean?
That's the wife. Well, serves him right for being such a bullhead.
I remember when I was first going with Floydie, Mr. Gildersleeve. He used to take me to dances all the time.
Yeah.
He used to be nice and light on his feet, but he's terrible now. I suppose it's from standing around that barber chair all day. That'd give anybody fallen arches. And then he's put on so much weight.
Yes.
Whatever it is, I'm crazy about dancing, but he don't seem to care for it.
Would you like some punch or something, Mrs. Munson?
Oh, no, I'm not thirsty. I'd rather just dance, Mr. Gildersleeve. blonde instead of a brunette. So I went and got my hair bleached. You should have heard him holler. You think I look better blonde, Mr. Gildersleeve?
I guess so. I mean, not particularly. I mean, hi, Floyd.
Hi, Commissioner. Swell party, ain't it?
Yeah.
It's nice to see Floydy enjoying himself for a change. As long as I'm having a good time, too.
Yeah.
A terrible argument about my costume. He said he thought a hula skirt was too undignified, but I know what he meant.
Yeah.
He meant he thought I was too old for it.
Oh.
But I guess I showed him. What I say is a girl isn't too old unless she feels too old.
Yeah.
You think I'm too old for a hula skirt, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Mrs. Munson, will you excuse me for a minute? I have to go to the boys' locker room.
Gildy, Happy New Year. Why aren't you dancing?
I've been dancing and you know it. Why didn't you cut in on me when I waved at you?
That hula skirt didn't fool me.
Old goat.
Say, here comes the lady bareback rider. Who is she anyway?
I don't know.
My impression is she's a little too popular for the likes of us.
Us? Speak for yourself, Hooker. There's nothing the matter with me. Just watch me. Pardon me, fair maiden. May I cut in?
Oh, for Pete's sake. I just got her myself.
What of it? You're supposed to let another fellow. I'll report you to the Grand Marshal. He's a friend of mine. Nuts. Well, here's one don't look so bad. Pardon me, fair maiden. May I cut in?
Throckmorton. Of course you may.
Gosh, I didn't know it was you. You look wonderful in that, whatever it is.
What a nice compliment.
It's a fact. Wouldn't have known it was you.
I'm supposed to be an Arabian princess.
Well, I'm a bold, bad pirate holding you for ransom. Say, how about shaking this fella you're with? We could go over to my place.
Oh, I don't think I could do that.
Why not? And the chief again, the big show-off, stops the music every 10 seconds or you can make a speech.
Your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen. In a few moments, we'll have the main event of the evening, the gentleman's foot race, followed by the unmasking, the grand march, and supper.
A foot race on this floor?
The regulations, as agreed on by the arrangements committee, are as follows. The ladies will line up at the east end of the auditorium, and the gentlemen at the opposite, or west end.
Yes.
At the signal, the men will race to claim their partners. First come, first serve. That is, whoever you catch is your partner for the grand march and for supper, which will follow immediately. I thank you.
Shall we dance some more, Eve?
If you like.
Say, Eve, I've got an idea. Let's have supper together. Tell this gym teacher you promised me the supper dance.
But Throckmorton, you just heard the announcement. Everyone is supposed to race for supper party.
Well, we could get around it. We could sneak out right now and come back after the race is over.
Why, Throckmorton, that would be cheating. But if you win the race fair and square, I'd love to have supper with you.
Race on this floor? Against a professional athlete?
Well, if you don't care enough to try...
Pardon me, may I cut in?
What the... Oh, him.
Oh, hello, Arthur. Thank you so much, Throckmorton.
You're welcome. My George, I'd like to show her. And that muscle man, too. Lionel Strongfort. I could figure out a way to win that race. Oh, why don't you look where you're going?
Ladies in their places?
Yeah.
Gentlemen in their places?
Yeah.
All right, I'll say 1, 2, 3, and then strike this gong, which has been kindly provided by Chick Miller, our orchestra leader. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
I made it! I choose the Lady Bareback Rider.
Morton P. Gildersleeve is the fastest man in the crowd. Let's give him a hand.
It wasn't so much.
How in the dickens did you do it, Commissioner? Everybody else was sliding around and falling down.
I went outside and put on my rubbers.
Well, I'll be darned.
I use my head, that's all.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone will now unmask.
Well, here I am, fair maiden, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, at your service. Come on, you have to take yours off, too.
He?
Marjorie! I forbade you to... that costume. Why, it's disgraceful. And now I'm stuck with you for supper.
You're stuck. I wanted to eat with Jerry, and now he's got somebody else.
Why, George, I've got a mind to spank you.
Happy New Year, Marjorie.
Same to you, Miss Goodwin.
Oh, I think it was sweet of you to choose Marjorie as your partner, Throckmorton. After all, New Year's Eve is a time for families to be together.
Oh, what's the use?
Sing, Marjorie.
Acquaintance be forgot, and days of olden times.
Say, Unky.
Nuts. I can't even manage to be a bad boy.
The Great Gildersleeve will be with us again shortly. I suppose every one of us would like to know what's ahead in 1947. Well, at the Kraft Foods Company, we have high hopes that delicious country sweet parquet margarine will be available in larger quantities this coming year. More parquet will be produced just as quickly as more fine, wholesome farm products are available. And perhaps the time isn't far off when there'll be plenty of parquet margarine for everyone. And here's one thing you can be sure of. Every single pound of parquet you buy in 1947 will be the same fine quality as always. Rich in good flavor, high in food energy. Every pound reliably fortified with 15,000 units of vitamin A. So look first for this margarine of Kraft quality. Look first for Parkay, P-A-R-K-A-Y. Parkay margarine, made by Kraft.
Pass the cinnamon rolls, will you, Marjorie?
Uncle, you've had four.
I don't care. I don't feel good. I need nourishment. For heaven's sake, can't the chief even let us eat in peace?
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. The committee of judges have asked me to announce the name of the lady they have chosen as queen of the masked ball. I'm happy to announce that Her Majesty is Miss Marjorie Gildersleeve Forrester.
She's my niece. She's my niece, do you hear? By George, Gildersleeve, blood will tell.
The Great Gildersleeve is played by Harold Perry. It is written by John Wheaton and Sam Moore. The music is by Jack Meekin. Included in the cast are Walter Tetley as Leroy, Louise Erickson as Marjorie, and Lillian Randolph as Bertie. Judge Hooker is Earl Ross and Dick LeGrand as Mr. Peavy. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the Kraft Foods Company and inviting you to listen in again next Wednesday for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
Good night. Happy New Year. See you in Memphis next week.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.